The main thought here in this question is understanding that life would be better if it was over with Jesus' return, like now. And especially when you're young, this is a hard one to understand. In fact, if you can take it, and this is like the most mature answer of all the answers I'm going to give you, is you just have to know that the passions of youth are filled with folly. That is, trust that you're a fool. And actually, you know, again, Proverbs 30, verse 2, it's kind of the starting point for a lot of stuff. But as a young person, I mean, trust that you're a fool who won't stay one, right? So, you know, I struggle to believe it would be better if Jesus came back. Yes, because you're young. So just believe that it will be, and don't worry about if you feel that it will be. Don't worry about how you can think it through. There's the two ways you can look at it. Neither of them really matter. What matters more is that he is risen, and therefore, since he said so, like, it's going to rock. It's going to rock. Why? It would be better if he didn't. It's going to rock. Where do we get this idea that it's going to be so much better to be here? Well, we just pay too much attention to what's going on here, and when you're young, it's easier to do that. You don't feel all the pain quite the same way yet. And clarity hasn't quite come, because clarity, again, is discipline plus time in a lot of ways. So look to the sky, though. I want to keep reading your question, but look into the sky. If you struggle with anything, including being glad Jesus is going to come back, there's no way to go wrong with once a day taking a moment to stop and look at the sky and imagine what would happen if he came back right now. Like, do a little countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, go. And like it didn't happen. Okay. But like, oh, it wouldn't have been bad, would it? Well, there you go. You know, there you go. Right. Just do that every day. You'll get it. It'll come. But you got some good, like, noggin questions in here. So let's keep digging. But a lot of feeling. So much of this question is feeling. And frankly, feelings don't count on judgment day. Just fact. Instead of clinging to temporal things, I cling to people. So now you've kind of replaced your devices with another security blanket, right? Another form of trust in humanity or this world. Okay, sure. Well, you're not going to be able to get entirely rid of it. Please don't try to live a sinless life. It's just not going to happen. I know humans are fallen. Yes, you do. Fail me regularly and need forgiveness just like me. However, I am burdened by a sin to hold fast to the people around me that I love. Any advice you may have on how not to do this, I would appreciate. In addition, I have a theory about where this comes from. Well, that'll help. I don't want to lose the types of relationships I have with these people when heaven comes. I know that the types of relationships in heaven will be so much better than we can imagine, but do no earthly relationships cross over or be made perfect? For example, why does not marriage exist in heaven? This causes me to cling to my significant other. These relationships are a good thing. Jesus has given them to me. It does not make sense to take them away. Marriage reflects Christ and his church. Will this not also be reflected in heaven? Thank you for the sacrifices you make to bring us guidance and truth. God be with you and your family. Again. So there's a bunch of little tangents in here. But the first part about I cling to people. How do I stop clinging to people? Right? In a sense of not like, I'm going to love you for you, but in a sense of I need you, right? And there is a definite lack of final development in the person who never makes that jump, right? Call it separation anxiety, call it what you will. There's a growth that needs to occur, which is not a separation anxiety, but is a positive personal development, an independent mind and heart that sees the value in others precisely because they'll be with us in eternity and not because of whatever they happen to be doing for us now, whether it is giving us a giant big bear hug or whether it's trying to stab us in the eye with something, you know, that the body in the present is indeed temporal, right? But the people are eternal, and that's the good news in a lot of ways, right? So, yes, you're not going to lose the relationships that you have with people in paradise. Men will neither be married nor given in marriage, but will be like the angels. A very enigmatic phrase from Jesus. I believe it fully, and I look forward to finding out what it means. But I don't think it means that I won't know that I was married to Meredith, and be glad that I was, and have a special understanding of her in my heart the rest of my eternity. However, I'm pretty confident that spending all of eternity with Meredith only would be selfish for her and for me. I mean, I was just thinking about this. Like, can you imagine, like, on that day, but it's not going to be that day. Maybe you get, like, a week of party with Jesus in New Jerusalem. You know, everyone's just running around, like, just really enjoying whatever the new meat is like, right? And then it all settles down, and you end up out at a villa somewhere, and there's your father as a young man. And you spend how long hearing about his life? How long? Wouldn't it be worth that? And then when you're done, guess who shows up but your great-grandson? Now you get to hear about his life, whole thing, how Jesus saved him, how it all turned out. I mean, there's so much coming we can't imagine, yeah? So much coming. And this idea that you're going to lose your soulmate, I do got to talk about that then, because I love Meredith. Mm-hmm. I would say we have a pretty tight bond at the end of the day. When one of us dies, it's going to hurt a lot for the other one. And so that way you could say our souls are mated to each other. That is, in fact, what has happened. The Bible talks as if one of us were to die, marriage to another human being is a completely healthy and normal process. And I just have to believe that. I don't really, why would I look forward to that? Why would I pray for that, right? But I do have to believe it. And so that means I have to believe that the soulmate language of America, which is that there's only one for you ever, is a dualism of the devil, right? It's a yin-yangism. It's this idea that you aren't even a person, actually. You need someone else to be one. We're talking about a sexist idea. There's one. You ladies, you've been made partakers and co-heirs in the resurrection to come, though ye be weaker vessels now, indeed, as the text says. Recognize what you got already. You got a lot. And the moment you say, I need a mate to complete my soul, then you do not have a soul that is complete at all. And the fact is, you do have a soul that's complete. First, cursed. Second, saved in Jesus. And redeemed and entire. And then now, God does indeed, through the holy matrimony of marriage, mate that soul to, well, one he has designed for you, who you will find. But you worry less about finding your soulmate, because that idea, again, makes people afraid they won't. Isn't that the weirdest thing? I have to find my soulmate. I don't know where they are. What are you talking about? You're not going to find them like that. Unless you want with someone who's just as neurotic. Golly. Instead, take care of your soul in Jesus. Pray for someone who has a soul in Jesus and loves the wisdom of Jesus, and then trust that you will indeed mate well. You'll mate well over your lifetime of pain and repentance and forgiveness and suffering and all of these things. Yeah? Christian glory does not pass away. Christian glory does not pass away. So 1 Corinthians 15. We'll try to just glance at this to give you the hat tip to go look at it. 1 Corinthians 15. Okay, so starting at verse 35. But someone will say, how are the dead raised up and with what body they come? Foolish one, right? So someone will say the resurrection is not possible. God doesn't exist. And he's like, dude, just don't even talk to that person. But he does answer them. What you sow is not made alive unless it dies. So he suddenly says humans are like seeds. Catch that. Humans are like seeds now in the earth unto the resurrection. Okay? And what you sow, you do not sow that the body that shall be, but mere grain, perhaps wheat or some other grain. But God gives it a body as he pleases, and to each seed its own body. All right, so that, we'll keep going. That was clear enough. Verse 39, all flesh is not the same flesh. And there is one kind of flesh of men, another flesh of animals, another fish, and another of birds. You can argue about that and get into debates about what that means. But the main idea, still moving forward, 40. There are also celestial bodies and terrestrial bodies, that's heavenly and earthly. But the glory of the celestial, that's the heavenly, is one, and the glory of the terrestrial is another, right? Unseen and seen are different things. Verse 41. There is one glory of the sun, another glory of the moon, another glory of the stars. One star differs from another star in glory. So All this is out of the different kind of bodies part, right? So the seed has a body, the plant has a body, the stars have a body, the moon has a body. So also, verse 42, is the resurrection of the dead. The body, the one you got right now, Adam, is sown in corruption. That is, your relationships, your idolatries, every thought, word, and deed, even the good ones, are sown. They go down to the grave in corruption, but they are raised in incorruption. Why? Jesus, right? You know that? Okay. It is sown in dishonor. It is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness. It is raised in power. It is sown in a natural body. It is raised in a spiritual body. That doesn't mean you won't have a body. He says the same that next. If you think that's what that means, read the next one. There is a natural body and there is a spiritual body. You're like, what does that mean? You don't know yet. You're a seed. You're going to be a flower. How can you imagine what it's like? You can't. And so it is written, the first man became a living being. The last Adam became a life-giving spirit. However, the spiritual is not the first, but the natural. And after that, the spiritual, that's some rabbiism right there. So if we can pull out of all that body language about the heaven, moon, stars, seeds, that what we're being sown as right now, which isn't just your body physically, but your flesh, your mind, your heart, your entire experience, is a seed compared to the flower that you will be on the day of resurrection in the everlasting kingdom that God has made for us all to dwell in. You can't really imagine that, but you can believe that there's no new marriages, but that all relationships so established by this age will be glorified into an eternal perfection. And that that will in fact be what we're after, is those relationships in that age. It is about the relationships. It is about the people. Just not for now only, but today unto eternity. Yeah? I also highly recommend Psalm 95 as a daily prayer for you. And I mentioned Psalm 37 already today. Both of those are going to help with your actual question. 95 especially, though.